All right. Hey, you guys, we've been in a series that we re-entered in the book of 2 Corinthians called When the Rains Come. And so it's really when the rains come again, which it is supposed to rain later this week. So let's my lawn could use it. So let's hope it does that. What this is a study of the book of 2 Corinthians, or at least the majority of it. And really what it's saying in this book is that sometimes life feels like this, and other times it feels like this, because it sometimes gets hard. And I've talked with a variety of you this morning, and I know that the few I've talked to, that it's true for everyone. Life is full of really good stuff and really hard stuff, really difficult things, painful things, and great joys. That's life, right? I love it on the Passover table for the Jewish Seder. On there, they have a bowl that's full of bitter and good herbs, you know, non-bitter herbs and things, sweet things. That's life. They get it, you know, that's right. It's a mixture of this side of heaven. It's a mixture of good and bad and hard and easy and joyful and difficult. That's what it is. And sometimes we tend to sell life in Christianity is it's all going to be great and easy. And it's totally a lie, and I apologize that we have lied so profoundly to people, because it's not about life getting easy. It's about life becoming meaningful. It's not about life turning good bad people into good people. It's about turning dead people into alive people. That's what the Christian life is all about, and dealing with real life. And so both of these happen, both the good and the bad. And this study of 2 Corinthians is really about this, the relationship between suffering, which is the reality, and I always say it in my weddings, and I said it again yesterday, that there are three rings in a wedding, right, in a marriage. There's the engagement ring, there's the wedding ring, and there's the suffering. And it's true, because it's just, you know, when you're married, you go, okay, I got the picture, because it's just not always easy. Sometimes the other person functions kind of oddly. You know, if you've ever noticed that in a marriage, the other person sometimes can be very strange in the way they think and see things, because it's different than the way I see it. And it does not fit. It just doesn't fit. But there's suffering in the reality, but there's also the power of the Spirit that exists. In the midst of this moral, societal, and interpersonal conflict, we experience the reality of the suffering in the midst of the power of the Holy Spirit in our lives. And so that's what it's all really all about. Now, the umbrella, and you probably should have this verse down by now, the umbrella statement, in a sense, over this whole book starts in the first chapter, verses 3 and 4, and it says this: Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the God of mercies, the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our affliction, so that we may be able to comfort those who are in affliction with the same kind of comfort with which we have been comforted by God. This learned ability to comfort, love, encourage, engage, be real with other people, because God has done it with us. Wow. Now, so you begin to think, well, what does that look like? And so we've been talking in recent weeks about the fact that today matters, and what we do with today matters, and as a result of that our heart matters. What happens at the human level of your heart really is important. And so talking about the human heart is hard, because it so easily gets calloused in life. And somehow trying to get those calluses off of our hearts, to have our hearts become softened to the issues of life and the issues of people, is just so important. And that's what he's talking about here, that our hearts matter. And so in chapter 6, verse 14 through 7:1, it was the fact that we don't want to make unbreakable commitments to people with of our hearts to anyone or anything who's answering to a different king. And we apply this in all sorts of places, but when you are loyal to a particular king, anyone or anything that violates that, you can't make an unbreakable commitment to. That's why marriage is so important. And it's not because having a non-Christian marry a Christian is a horrible thing. It's not. I mean, they're good people. It's not the issue. The issue is who are they going to answer to at the end of the day? The same king or a different king? And oddly enough, with the one who marries someone who answers to another king, the Christian usually is the one who loses their king, loses their loyalty to the God of the universe. And they begin to answer and give their lives to whatever the other person serves. It just seems that that's usually the way it works. But also then in the next, in chapter 7, we talked about the fact that we do want to make room, give our hearts to people who have our backs, even if it's difficult. We talked about it last week, that we would, if they may come with something difficult in our lives, that creates what we call a godly sorrow or a godly grief rather than a worldly grief. And a godly grief brings us to a place of repentance, of change, of embracing, of honesty, of real, rather than denial and live in shame and live in guilt, that we can live in the light and we can live real and be really honest about it. And we want to give our hearts to those kinds of people who love us enough to tell us the truth. Okay? Now, today we're going to talk, in chapter 8, we're going to talk about another issue of the heart, in the fact that this is the distance between our heart and our pocketbooks is not very far. Now, I know you go, oh, crud, we're going to talk about money. We're really going to talk about money. Yes, in a sense, but we're going to talk more about this issue of generosity. And Paul addresses this. It's really a powerful thought. So work with me here. Follow along as we get into this. And let's start in verse 1. So he says here, we want you to know, brothers, about the grace of God that has been given among the churches of Macedonia. Okay, so he's been working now, and there's something unique going on among the churches of Macedonia. We'll look at a map here in a minute. But it says, for in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty. So Macedonia, the churches there, this is not a notoriously wealthy part of the Roman Empire. In fact, it's a notoriously poor part of the Roman Empire. It is still a notoriously poor part of the world in the Macedonia. This is southern Bulgaria, parts of Albania, and even parts of Yugoslavia. These are not notoriously rich places. It was true then too. But they have an abundance of joy as they came to Christ, but they have an extreme poverty that it's overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part. The uniqueness that out of their poverty, they were very generous. Now let's look at this. For they gave according to their means, as I can testify, and beyond their means of their own accord, begging us earnestly for the favor of taking part in the relief of the saints. Wow. Now, you guys, let's see what's going on here. Let's go back to our map. This is kind of a map. You know, it's my favorite book of the Bible almost. This is an area of the Aegean Sea area. We have Greece here on the left. We have Turkey on the right, Asia Minor. So the Corinth down here in the bottom left is where this letter is being written to, this unique church in this very unique town, a sailor's town, kind of a wild town of Corinth. He's writing it from Ephesus, which is one of the most incredible cities of the Mediterranean during this time. And he's talking about having gone up to Macedonia. So Paul has, instead of going to Corinth, which he told them he was coming back, and he didn't do it as soon as they thought, and they were mad at him, right? They were talking about, we're ticked off because you said you were coming back and you didn't come, and you went to Macedonia, you knucklehead. It's kind of what they're saying, but he says, yeah, I went there, and in fact, Titus met me there among the churches in Macedonia. They gave the gospel, they came to Christ, the churches were really responding, and they were incredibly generous in all that they were doing. And so what they were giving for is this, is that Paul had asked them, let's go to this next map, which originally gives us kind of a larger view of this. So he's in here, but back home in Jerusalem, let's circle it. Here's Jerusalem. Here's Israel. Back home in Jerusalem, there's an incredible famine going on. The economy has just tanked and people are struggling big time. They are hurting. And so one of the things he's done is he's asked the churches, the people in the churches, to give financially for the good of those back at the mothership, if you will. Okay? And in fact, they do it. And here's his argument. Let me just read out of Romans. Here's the way Paul was thinking in Romans chapter 15. He says, this is the reason that I have so often been hindered from coming to you. He's talking to the Romans, right? He can't wait to get to the center of the universe, in a sense, of the Roman Empire. He can't wait to get to Rome. And so he's been hindered for this reason. He says, but now, since I no longer have any room for work in these regions, and since I have longed for many years to come to you. So here's the deal. He has been working, planting churches in the original area we looked at, in this whole area of Greece and Asia Minor. He has been working for years planting churches there, always wanting to go to Rome. And now he feels the freedom. Like, okay, my work here is done. There's nothing more to do. Now, it's not that there's nothing more to do. There's a lot more to do. But his role was done. He's a church planter. He's an initiator. He's the one who gets things going. Then he says, Timothy, Gaius, Titus, others, hey, you come, put it together. You continue with it. I'm going to the next place. And then the next place. And he keeps moving on. And eventually he wants to get to Rome. And then eventually he wants to get to Spain. There are even reports that he may have even gotten to England during his ministry that we don't know about. It's legend. We're not sure. But there is some evidence that he may have gotten all the way to England before he came back and was imprisoned in Rome. Wow. Well, look at verse 24. I hope to see you in passing as I go to Spain. And to be helped on my journey there by you once I have enjoyed your company for a while. I love that. Man, I can't wait to be with you. I hope you help me on my journey, but man, I can't wait to be in your company. I like that. Verse 25, at present, however, I am going to Jerusalem to bring the aid to the saints. That's what he had to do first. Now, you guys, for us, that would be, hey, I have to go to Jerusalem first, so I'm going to get an airplane. It'll take me about 6 hours to get there. I'll spend a few days, and I'll get back on a plane, and then I'll head for Spain. This is about a week's deal, right, for us. For him, this is months and months, maybe years, that it's going to take him to make this journey. So he says, hey, I'd love to come, but for now, I need to go to Jerusalem. Wow, that's quite a commitment. Then look at verse 26. For Macedonia and Achaia have been pleased to make some contribution for the poor among the saints at Jerusalem. They were pleased to do it. For they were pleased to do it, and indeed they owe it to them. For if the Gentiles had come to share in their spiritual blessings, they ought also to be of service to them in material blessing. When therefore I have completed this and have delivered to them what has been collected, I will leave for Spain by way of you. Wow. He understood that what had come out of what had started in Judea, what had happened in Jerusalem, as the church had been planted, it began to grow and was struggling, that he said, the spiritual blessing comes from there. That God worked in a unique way right there in Israel. And now, as it spreads around the world, let's not forget where it started. And they're hurting, guys. They're really hurting. Let's help them. And they do it. Wow, it's an incredible thing, right? So let's go on to verse 5 then, back in Corinthians chapter 8. And verse 5 says, in this, not as we expected, but they gave themselves first to the Lord and then to the will of God to us. You see what he's saying is these churches in Macedonia had been amazing. They had really had a heartfelt commitment to Christ. And as a result of their heartfelt commitment to him, they had a heartfelt commitment to people. And they'd done not only according to their means, but even beyond their means. Paul was not asking them to give more than they could, but he was asking them to give what they could. But the churches of Macedonia, many had given more than even their means. They sacrificially gave. Wow. And he was so fired up about it. It's amazing. So that's about the churches in Macedonia. Now he's going to apply it to the church in Corinth, okay? So look at this in verse 6. Accordingly, we urged Titus that as he had started, so he should complete among you this act of grace. So he had sent Titus to Corinth to check on things, to encourage them to give to the need of the saints in Jerusalem. And he's encouraging Titus that just as he had started, that he should complete. And he calls it an act of grace. That he was asking them to step in and be gracious, giving, generous people. Now, let's go on. Now he's kind of transitioned to the church in Corinth. Look at verse 7. But he says, but as you, church in Corinth, excel in everything. And then he kind of lists it. You have excelled in faith, in speech. Now, let's face it. They haven't been perfect, right? All we have to do is read the letters of 1 and 2 Corinthians, and we go, okay, this is kind of a crazy group of people. They're doing all sorts of stuff. But he also sees their honesty of their walk with Christ. He says you've excelled in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in all earnestness, and in our love for you. Then he challenges them. See that you excel in this act of grace also, this thing of generosity. He says, excel there too. Now look in verse 8. I say this not as a command, but to but to prove by the earnestness of others that your love also is genuine. He's not commanding it. He's not forcing them. He's asking them. He's challenging them. He's exhorting them. He's encouraging them to express their love, that their love is so genuine. Now look at this, and let's circle it. He's going to illustrate this genuine love. For you know the grace that our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich. Wow, is that amazing? The illustration is that by Jesus sacrificially giving and becoming poor, he makes us rich. Wow, it's quite a challenge, isn't it? And the illustration is the very thing we should base our lives on. Now, look at the next verse. And in this matter, Corinthians, I give my judgment. And let's circle that. And let's circle this next part. This benefits you. He says, in this matter, it's my judgment as Paul, that this benefits you to be generous. This is there's a benefit to you to be generous. Who a year ago started not only to do this work, but also to, and let's put a heart behind this. He says, not only did you start to do this, because he'd been with them, he challenged them to do it, they had started, but he says this, but also not only did you start, but you desire to do it. This word desire is a word that comes that illustrates the human heart, that it was in their hearts to be generous with the people in Jerusalem. And so they had maybe gotten off track, but he challenged them to get back on track because it actually was in their heart. It wasn't a forced thing. And isn't that probably where churches go wrong? Usually when we talk about money, we talk about, hey, just cough it up, Jack, you know, kind of thing. But rather than saying appealing to the human heart to do what is in your heart, and that's a great line of recent years that I've heard people say, is that it, you know, about this or that, to say, if it's in your heart, challenging the human heart, is it in your heart to do such a thing? If it's not, then don't do it. It might be out of an obedient heart, but if it's not anywhere in your heart, then ask God to change your heart. And here he says, it was in your heart to do it from the beginning. So I challenge you as you started to now finish it. Now look at this in verse 11. Let's circle it. So now, finish doing it well, so that your readiness in desiring it may be matched by your completing it out of what you have. I challenge you to finish what you started. Be generous with the church. Those who are in Jerusalem, those people you've never met, those people you've never seen and never will, but they started this whole thing, they're hurting, let's help them. Wow, that's an incredible thought, isn't it? Wow. Now let's go on to verse 12. For if the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he doesn't have. He's saying, if you're ready to do it, then the acceptable part is to do what you have, what you can, not what you don't have. You know, and sometimes when you feel like giving, you go, I just don't have that much. You know, I don't have as much as the next guy. And Paul's saying, it doesn't matter what the next guy has. It only matters what you have. And can you share from that? It's not an evaluation, or it's not comparison. It doesn't matter what the next person has. And we could go around right now in this room and say, what do you have? But it's not the point, right? The point is, whatever it is you have, are you willing to share it? And to share it in an appropriate way. Because look in verse 13. For I do not mean that others should be eased and you be burdened. He's not saying, hey, now you need to give all you have to them. Now their life will be easy and your life will stink. You know, I mean, he's not saying that. But he's saying, but as a matter of fairness, I think this applies in our modern day because there is this whole movement of what we would call the redistribution of wealth. Someone would even suggest that our government and the administration is trying to redistribute wealth and to say it's not fair that you have and they don't. So you need to give what you have to them. And there's a part of that that's right. There's a part of it that's not, because if it's government controlled, it doesn't come from the human heart, right? It has to come from the human heart that we would share with those who don't have if we do have. And in fact, look at this. He goes on and he says, and in verse 14, your abundance at the present time should supply their need, so that their abundance may supply your need, that there may be fairness. He's saying, give to them when they have need, because someday they may have and you might have need. And there is this relational commitment to the good of one another out of our generous hearts is what Paul's getting at. And I think that's exactly right. And then, in fact, he even uses the illustration here in verse 15. As it is written, and this comes out of Exodus 16. So he's quoting Exodus here, and he's in there quoting an experience of Israel as they were out in the wilderness, headed from Egypt to the promised land for 40 years. And out there, things got dry, and there wasn't much food. And they were getting hungry and thirsty. And miraculously, God supplied for them. And what he gave them is there were times where he would give them water right out of a rock. There were other times where he would give them quail. In fact, they were so hungry, they said, man, we need some real food. And so he gave them quail, and he gave them so much quail, it made them sick because they were complaining about it. But also, he supplied what's called manna every morning, 6 days a week. And he told them to collect it. But he also told them to do this. Don't collect more than you need. Collect all that you need because it'll be enough. But don't collect more than you have because the reality is it's going to spoil by tomorrow morning. And it always did, except for the manna they collected on Friday. It would last for 2 days through the Sabbath in an incredible, miraculous way. They would collect enough for 2 days and it would stay. It would remain good. And so here in Exodus 16, it says this, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. It was this idea that God will supply enough, and that we participate in that with each other, and that we would have enough. There's a family that we have been helping as Quest. I can't tell the details, just to protect the privacy and the dignity. But there is a family that we've been helping. And I got a call yesterday in an absolute panic that this next month they wouldn't have enough. Circumstances were that they just wouldn't have it. It was really painful to hear the angst in this family's heart. And when I said to them, hey, look, you figure out the details, but we've got you covered. We're not leaving. We got you covered. And it took a minute or two, but it finally just settled in. We are not going to leave you alone. This is a point where you have little and we have much. We're not going to dump you. We're going to meet you there. And there will be a day when he'll have an opportunity to do the same back, right? So it seems to me when we do this, it talks about, it's about generosity. It's about caring for one another. It's about this, that the heart matters and the distance between our hearts and our pocketbook isn't very far. We all feel it, don't we? You go, ah. In 1984, there's a story, a true story, in Yonkers, New York, of this gal named Phyllis Pinzo and a guy named Robert Cunningham. Robert Cunningham was a policeman in New York, and he went in, and he was in this this diner. And he didn't have enough money to leave a tip. And so he said to the waitress, hey, I tell you what, tomorrow I'll either give you double the tip or I'll share in the lottery where I'm going to win tomorrow. I'll share it with you. And the next day he won $6 million in the New York lottery. And he went back into that waitress in this diner and he shared half of it with her. Now, in 1994, they made a movie, a fictionalized version of that, taking that and kind of expanding it. It's called It Could Happen to You, Nicolas Cage and Bridget Fonda. And they made a whole movie out of it. It's a good movie. You ought to watch it. But there is this scene of generosity. I want you to watch it.
About our little agreement.
Huh?
Double the tip or half of what I won in the lottery.
That agreement.
How about we make it your choice? Door number one, double the tip. Door number two, half of what I won in the lottery.
My choice. Okay. Whatever. I'll take door number two. I'll take half of the lottery. Pay up.
You're sure?
Positive.
I was hoping you'd say that.
I'll bet you were. Better luck next time, right?
Oh, actually, we were, we were pretty lucky.
Oh, really? Did you win something?
We won something.
All right. What, we won something? What did we win?
$4 million.
Why are you doing this?
What?
This sick joke.
No, it's not a joke.
This is not a joke.
No.
No. What you're telling me, what you're saying to me, that you're really...
What, you think I'd make this up?
Yes, yes, I do.
I'm not. We won.
The lottery. The New York State, the lottery. The actual lottery, New York State lottery, $4 million.
Yes, $4 million is our share. Happened last night. Well, it would have been more, except a bowling team from Albany called in. They took about $9 million out of the pot, but we won.
And you're telling me that you're actually going to split it with me?
A promise is a promise.
Oh, my God.
You all right?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! But there's this part of me, it's a neurotic part of me, I'll admit.
Accept it.
How can I?
Accept it. I want you to have it. With all my heart.
Yvonne, take it.
Take it. I think that's what the Corinthians eventually said, is with all of our heart, take what we give to Jerusalem. With all of our heart. It's interesting, this waitress eventually bought the diner. And they paid a table in the corner that was reserved for homeless and poor people. And there was always a free meal in the corner of this diner. I think that's what they're saying here. Is Paul is saying, hey, be generous with what you have. So let's maybe apply this really quickly. So therefore, what now? What do you do with this? First of all, what do we find out about God in this? What do we find out about us? What do we find out about what is it we're instructed to obey? What is our understanding of who he is? What's our understanding of us? And how does life really work? It works when we're generous of heart, right? I think that's what Paul's saying. So let me just see. Therefore, what do we do with this? First of all, do you see generosity as an expression of God's grace? Do you see that it is this part of the grace of God that he not only does in our lives, but he does in other people's lives as a result of our generosity? Do you see that? Embrace that. Enjoy that. Give that. Wow. Secondly, is your giving according to our means? Is our giving according to our means, or is it under our means, or is it above our means? The ability to give. And wherever you might give it, estimated in America that Christians give 2.5% of their income away. Estimated amount. Just think what we could do in a world if maybe we gave more. Challenge ourselves, sacrificially give. Maybe we could make a huge dent. I don't know. Third, do you see the godly benefit of sacrificial giving? There is a benefit exterior to us, that there is a benefit too of God's blessing in your life. Doesn't mean you're going to give money. That whole prosperity gospel thing is full of nothing. But the reality is that eventually it's all going for naught anyway, right? It's all going to burn. You don't take it anywhere with you. The blessing that we can leave is a benefit also to us. Next, let me ask you this. Are there commitments that you have made that you need to follow through on? That's what he's challenging the Corinthians, right? You started it, finish it well. Don't stop. And we probably have some of those in our own lives where we've made commitments, and are we following through, even if it's costly? I want to encourage you. And I'm not saying to quest, you guys. I'm not saying here. There might be all sorts of places in your lives. You say, hey, I started. I need to finish it. I need to go for it. And some of it, you know, sometimes I think our wealth is not always in money. Sometimes it's in our abilities. Sometimes it's in our time. In fact, I would say one of the unique things about modern day culture is that more valuable than our money to us is our time. Are we willing to sacrifice that too for the good of people? Because sometimes they just need our time. Are we willing to follow through with that? Whatever it is that you've promised to give, will you follow through? Is there somewhere you need to follow through that you've kind of let it go? And last but not least, and maybe most importantly, I think we'd say this. Do you embrace that Christ's sacrificial giving, his poverty, that it of himself has allowed us to become eternally rich? That he who gave himself to become poor for our good has made us rich out of his own poverty. That his giving of himself, that we've become so rich eternally, personally, at a heart level, that we give generously of all that we have to those who have need. Because someday we may need it back, right? And when we've reached out, people reach back. It's all about relationship. It's all about connection. It's all about caring, right? That's what the church is supposed to be. That's what we're supposed to be. And you guys, I will have to say this, and I don't have numbers. Well, I have some numbers, but I don't know how to compare it. But I would say this. So far, my experience of you has been that you're profoundly generous. You have given richly, and you have given broadly. And I think you're to be commended for it. And I think God will bless you and this church and what we're trying to do to reach a community with the grace of God as expressed in generosity. So I want to commend you, but I want to join Paul and say, let's not stop. Let's not leave it unfinished. Let's maybe even radically go to a whole new level in our lives to make a difference in our community and around the world. We'll show you pictures of the home that you built in Haiti and another home that we'll build again this year in Haiti for someone's home that went from just steel, just corrugated steel and cardboard and plastic to a real home. I don't know. We just dream about what we might be able to do if our hearts were generous, continued where we're at. Okay? So, no fancy ending. I'm not going to play the drums. The band's going to come out and play the drums. But just a challenge that the distance between our heart and our pocketbook is not very far. Remember that this week. My guess is that God will give you some opportunity this week. That's kind of the way he does things. He's kind of odd that way. We hear something, learn something, and all of a sudden it's in our face that we would be generous. And I'll just finish with this story. When I was right out of college, I was working as a youth director of a church in Loveland, Colorado. And one weekend, we took the kids skiing at Steamboat Springs. And when we got back about 9 o'clock on Sunday evening from the trip, I dropped off all the kids, and I got to my house. It was a rented house, and it had burned down. It's like, bummer, you know? I got school to teach tomorrow, you know? It was a drag, you know? And bummer, you know? And I went up, and I was trying to kind of filter through open the door, which didn't really work. But there was this little sign on the side of the door, a little piece of paper, and it said, "Hey, Kevin, your place is unlivable." I was like, "Yeah, duh." You know, and come over to our place. The back door is unlocked. Go downstairs. There's a room ready for you. It was a couple in our church. I didn't know them hardly at all. But I did need a place to stay. And so I went over there, and I walked in the back door, and I went downstairs, and sure enough, there was a room ready for me. And I lived there for the next 2.5 years with this incredible couple named Willie and Bonnie Banger. Bonnie's now pretty old. I'm going to go see her this week just to say hello. Willie's passed away. But their generosity was amazing in my life. I'll never forget it. Totally appreciative. God's calling us to the same thing, it seems to me. So let's worship together as Luke and the band lead us to a God who is incredibly generous with his heart. Okay?